Well, good morning. Thanks for having us. As Jill said, I'm a pastor on staff here, and this is...
Here, get closer.
Closer?
Yeah.
No, we're so unified, we had to come up opposite sides of the stage. Yeah. Good morning,
good
by
morning.
The way. Yeah. We're just excited to be here. I know it's we've been able to speak at MOPS a handful of times over the years, and I know it's kind of one of my favorites. This is the... we're parents now of older kids. We'll show you some pictures. They're getting older, which is pretty crazy. But I just love, and I do a lot of premarital counseling and young couples. And so that's still a lot of my world. And a lot of the students that I had as youth pastor are starting to get married. So I'm doing, weddings now of former students. And they're just getting to that cusp of having kids. And so it's, we're getting really close to that point where I can keep saying, see, I told you so, all that kind of stuff. See how you treated me when you were, in the youth group, so that kind of thing. But I love this stage, and obviously, Joy really loves this stage. She just is at home with a newborn in her arms, and then, pretty much when they turn two, she likes to kind of go, no, now you take them. I want another one. She wants to just keep hitting reset, but... We didn't do that. But before we jump in, just wanted to kind of show, some photos for those of you who don't know us. This is our family here. This was taken, about a year ago, I guess. Right before our oldest daughter, Serena. So we have our youngest is Skye here in the front, and she is 10. And then we have our Riley over here on the far side. She is 12. And then we have Caleb right next to me. He's 15, sophomore at San Clemente. And then we have our daughter Serena, who is 26, and she's in New Zealand right now with Youth with a Mission, doing missions work. So she is not with us. But then I think we have another photo. There we go. There's a picture of us when we were, kind of at your stage in the trenches. And you can kind of, you can probably resonate with all the, we had the teenager in the back who's like, I know it all, and I'm in the back so I can get my privacy and my independence. We have the boy who's just being a boy, he's gonna put ears on mom, being funny. And we have our middle who, as we talk through and answer some of your questions, we have our middle who was very willful. And I know that was resonated with a lot of your questions. How do you deal with a strong-willed child? Well, that was our strong-willed, as you can see. And then our distracted one, our little one, she's just like a little, just anything. She's like squirrel, just anything that happens, she's there and distracted. But so that was us kind of in this stage. And then we have one more that's more recent. This was just like a month ago when on a worship night here at church. And that night, actually, our son, I got the privilege of baptizing him. So that was very cool. And that was just a month ago. So obviously Serena's not there because she was halfway across the world.
And then JoJo in the corner.
And JoJo photobombing in the back, yeah. All right, well, so that's just a kind of a glimpse of where we're at now. Again, now our youngest is 10, so we're moving up and on a little bit, but definitely, like I said, resonate with this age group. So what I'm gonna try to do is I'm just gonna kind of manage the clock a little bit. We're gonna try to plow through as many of your questions as we can get through. And again, by no means do we sit up here as experts on parenting. There is no perfect parent. We've, have made, continue to make, certainly our fair share of parenting mistakes.
It's a humbling job. There's a lot of humility in parenting. There's a lot of sanctification that takes place in parenting. So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. For sure. So, so we'll just kind of get through as many. So I apologize if we don't have time to get to maybe one of your questions, and hopefully a lot of them kind of fall along the same lines. So we'll just try to get through as many as we can here. All right. So first question was, what do you do to be intentional about your parenting? So a pretty broad question. What do we do to be intentional? I think you nailed it just right there out of the gate. Intentionality is the key. And, so whatever we're going to do it with intentionality. It's, we were just kind of chatting last night, and it's kind of, it's, as you know, it translates to anything. If you want to be good at, exercise or CrossFit or whatever it is, you don't just go into boot camp or CrossFit and kick the tractor tire or, you know, kind of try to move it. You be intentional. You try to lift that thing. And you, when you finally do lift it over and tip it over, you don't just go, okay, I did it. What do? You do it again. And somebody's saying, do it 10 more times.
And again, and again, until you're a grandparent.
And that's kind of the thing with parenting is intentionality. Do you want to get better at it? Is it something that it's a learning process, and we all know it is. But yeah. Intentionality is like kind of having that goal.
Having a goal and having something catapult you into that. And for me, it was looking at this human life and going, how am I going to make sure that this little one is going to be, one, a follower of Christ for us, to know who he is before God, but to grow up and be a godly person, a person who's going to give to others and love others and be selfless. And I didn't want, I mean, that was my drive, was going, wow, how am I going to have this little person be a light? And not a troublemaker or a person who's walking through this life aimlessly. You know, I was like, goodness, that was my drive too. You know, before God was like, I've got this great responsibility. And so that for me too was my push in all of that.
Yeah, I think for us, like I said, it's what's the goal? Is the goal to have good, obedient kids? Is the goal, as Joy said, our goal in our family is we want them to love Jesus, not just obey rules, because as you know, they can be good at obeying the rules when we're around, or if a teacher's around, or a coach is around, or whatever. But, you know, do you want your kids to have kind of that Eddie Haskell effect? You know, if you Leave It to Beaver, right? It's just sort of that, like, yes, Mr. and Mrs. Cleaver. And then he's the first guy to, you know, bring up the evil plan or whatever it is.
Yeah, or a true, genuine heart.
Yeah.
And their own convictions. And that just takes work and effort. And
yeah. And so for us, our rally point, just to share a scripture out of the gate, is really, it's called the Shema. So it's you know, kind of going back to Israel's history of how they, their biggest unifying factor in how they viewed themselves before the Lord, and then how they raised their children. And it's Deuteronomy 6. And, you know, so for us, like that question, what do you do to be intentional? For us, our intentionality comes from knowing what our goal is, knowing what our aim is, knowing what the end is. And so that comes from, we draw it from Deuteronomy 6. It says, starting in verse 4, it says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise," obviously constantly. "You shall bind them as a sign on your hand. They shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." And so for us, really, that intentionality comes from, first and foremost, are we loving the Lord our God with all our heart, mind, soul, strength? First and foremost, because it's got to come from us. We can't say, do this, child, if we're not willing to do it. So our intentionality just comes from our own individual relationship with the Lord. Anything to add to that? Or
nope.
All right. So that intentionality, it comes from, again, scripture, how we want to be before the Lord first and foremost. And then as we have a real relationship that we're working on, we impress that on our children. So, all right, let's answer a fun one real quick.
And if you guys want more, like, practical tips, don't ever hesitate to send me a text or, you know, because we won't have time to go into, like, well, here's an example. But, or, you know, so don't ever hesitate to approach us and maybe ask for more practical tips.
Well, here's a practical tip right now.
Okay, sorry.
All right. So we'll try and bust through some quick ones here. Please give any tips or tricks on how to brush a 2-year-old's teeth.
Pin them down.
What did we do over those seasons?
Everything needs, you know, in life, just eat your vegetables. You got to make it fun. But there comes a point where making it fun might not work, and you just may have a very defiant child, and boundaries need to be set. And we'll get into that a little bit more in a second. But sometimes you got to make it fun. You gotta have boundaries and just make them do it. Or you can jump online and Google rotten teeth and show them a picture, which really did help. Even when they got older and they got a little lazy and they're too busy. And I'm like, hold on, dude. You want to see a picture? And I Google this, you know, person just with rotted teeth. And I'm like, and it doesn't feel good. And that kind of like, whoa, yeah, okay.
Yeah, we just keep saying, like, you don't want to have pirate teeth.
Yeah.
It was a little harder for the boy because he's kind of like, pirate teeth are kind of cool.
Yeah.
But the girls, it was a little easier to say, you don't want pirate teeth. And, you know.
And every child's different. Everyone has a different child here. You've got a, you know, one that's really easy, one that might be defiant, one that may not be able to do it, one that you're just going to have to get in there and do it for them. And for me, I would sometimes even over little simple things like, how am I going to brush this kid's teeth? You know, and I'd ask questions from other moms. Sometimes I'd just go before the Lord at night and just go, Lord, Holy Spirit, just lead me tomorrow. What does this little kid need tomorrow? And really just guide me. And it's pretty amazing how he shows up, even in the teeth brushing, you know, and each kid was different.
Yeah, so. I'd say probably just on a practical step, there was, I can't remember which one, but, you know, we'd just kind of give them a toothbrush, and it's a win just to have them kind of chew on the toothbrush because it's starting to do something. You know, all right, so that's a start. Or we'd kind of say, you kind of have to put it into your routine too. Like, okay, you know, if every night we're going to read a book, well, before we go to bed, let's do a quick brush, and we go in and we do it together. And, you know, it's just instilling it into your routine so that it doesn't become a fight. It's all they've ever known.
That's good. That's good.
So I'd say that's, you know, kind of a part of it. And just knowing, like, okay, they don't have to be perfectly flossed, perfectly brushed every time. Those teeth are going to fall out anyway. So, you know, just don't let your kid play that excuse on you. But, you know, it's just, again, it's instilling that early so that it's not a fight later.
Yes,
and
that's
as
good.
A youth pastor for many, many years, I saw lots of the ramifications of years and years and years of parents not dealing with it early and seeing how it rears itself as a teenager, and it's scary.
And
it starts as those simple things, and as you know, it becomes a lot heavier.
And age, as far as early, we're talking like year old, maybe even before. I mean, you're training them when they arrive. It doesn't start training like, oh, let's start at 2, because they understand me. They understand you when they're babies. And so they may not be able to communicate, but they certainly can understand. So, and I understand that there's children that may not be able to process that, because there's, you know, those situations too. But for the most part, children at a very, very young age can communicate and understand. So don't let them fool you by their cuteness.
All right, let's move into another one. A couple questions that are along the same line is, how do you guys set boundaries, your yes be yes and your no be no, when balancing ministry and family? When do you know it's been too much? What does it look like to take a Sabbath one day a week with the family when there are kids that require so much, meals to be made, etc.? How do you take a day of rest as a stay-at-home mom?
Let's start from the top.
So,
let's kind of work our way down.
Yeah, kind of the idea of rest. How do you take a rest in setting boundaries, a balance of life, ministry, things, you know, again, doesn't have to be ministry, mm-hmm. just the balance of life and events and busyness.
I think we live in a really, really busy culture. I mean, on every single level, from sitting at your house on your couch, your mind is busy looking at your phone. It really is. It's crazy. I had a life before phone and I had a life after phone. And let me tell you, it's in the fast lane. And so I think we really need to wake up and be aware of how distracted and how busy we all have become and what yes people we've become. So parenting and being a mom back, you know, 50 years ago was it was in the slow lane, because these moms didn't overcommit themselves. They didn't say yes to everything. They weren't busy trying to be involved in so much. So for me, I'm kind of on the cusp. I'm 46 years old, so I've kind of saw that generation of women who weren't crazy, and they were, you know, really just kind of taking it slow, focusing in on their kids, and then the generation growing up with, it's just a different speed. So for me, that setting boundaries in how busy I allow myself to be or how overcommitted. In the earlier years, I said yes to everything. I had a business, a salon that I had with 20 employees, worked full time, had a teenager and a little one. And then I was in MOPS and I was in a Bible study. And
helping me with ministry.
I was helping Darren with ministry. I was like, sign me up, yes. And then, you know, I didn't even have the phone on top of that because we didn't have the internet then. You throw that in the mix and I would have spun out. But I quickly realized to have a Sabbath day, I had to just rearrange things. And I can say that now I can, in the daytime, have a Sabbath where I sit down and I'm not running from 8 in the morning till late at night because I've said no to some things and I shifted my schedule after that second child and just said, I can't do everything. And I need to protect my family and I need to protect myself as a mom and I need to protect my children from that. So
one of the practical things that I saw Joy do. Oh, so you
go on. No, I was, no, tell me.
I was gonna say, one of the practical things I saw Joy do was, this was a number of months ago, she just noticed she was distracted a lot. You know, and it's easy to do too. When the kids get a little older, a little more independent, you feel like, oh, I'm getting a little more time back. But then she'd realize, okay, I'm on my phone now, and I don't necessarily need to be as much on, you know, Pinterest or whatever it was,
Instagram
and all that. And so, you know, she basically set a rule for herself, again, a discipline. This is, I want to intentionally be more present here at the, you know, after practices are done and everybody's home. And so she put her phone to bed, basically. After 6 o'clock, she'd go, all right, I'm done with my phone. I need to be here with my family. I need to have, you know, intentionally, you know, if I'm just looking at my phone, it's easy not to ask my son how his day was and go deeper than just, oh, it was fine. And so I think I really took a lead off her doing that.
And I'm 9 months into it. I'm not on social media. Do I feel disconnected? Absolutely. Do I feel kind of not as cool? Absolutely. Am I not getting to show all the rad things that are taking place in my family? Yeah. But I'll tell you what, it has brought me back to kind of just that, again, being present and captivating the moment and enjoying it. So setting boundaries for me was really important. I can be an extrovert. I want to share. I want to be out there. But I realized that could get in the way of me being the kind of mom and wife that I needed to be and the just being home, being able to create something for my family when they came home and not feeling like, gosh, I'm not good enough, or, oh, I want to do that, or, oh, I, you know, it started to play in on how I felt about myself, the whole social media part. Now, I'm not saying it's bad or you shouldn't do it by all means. It's just kind of my personality. I knew that needed to just kind of not be in my life at this moment. I may be on it tomorrow. I don't know. But what I'm saying is that was a practical thing that kind of helped me sort of refocus and set boundaries.
As you know, it can get real easy just to kind of look at what is everybody else doing.
Yeah. Right?
Oh, they're going on that vacation. I didn't get to go on that vacation. Oh, their kid's so accomplished. My kid's not accomplished. You know, it can be just such the comparison game that's kind of not helpful when it comes to your own family.
And balancing ministry, I decided I wanted to see my husband, so I did a lot with Darren. So I, you know, said, okay, I won't do this part of ministry so I can be with Darren. And, you know, for many, many years, our lives were so busy with some sports and ministries with the kids' youth groups. We didn't do small group on Wednesday nights because it was the only night we could come together and sit at the dinner table. And that was really important for us. So we had to say no, and it was okay. And there's seasons in your life where you should say no. And it's so good for you. It's the desert where you're just kind of walking through that, and God's able to just really do a powerful work in that.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's finding quick Sabbaths as well is important. You know, so for us, we're pretty intentional with the later hours of the evening after we've kind of, you know, and there's times now as the kids are older, they're up later, too, so they're wanting to just crash in bed with us. And so we're at times, and you'd think, oh, that's so great. You know, your 15-year-old wants to be in bed with you and cuddle up and get scratches. And we make sure all that happens because that's obviously important and that's really cool to have a 15-year-old that wants to do that. But we're also very intentional to go, all right, bud, you're out. you know, get out, it's mom, dad time. And so that we're intentional, and that can be a Sabbath of sorts, just in the busyness that we can kind of reconnect at the end of the day. And it's, you're kind of setting up that, those priorities of going, yeah, kids, you're important, but boom, now you're out. Now you're not important. This is way more important. And so it's just communicating that to them. We've been doing that from day one of, you know, it's this first, because you're only going to benefit. You're only going to have more confidence, feel more secure, more self-esteem, more all those important things that we want kids to have as they see us connected and pouring that into them. If they see discord, disconnect here, then you can just see it just plays out everywhere. So Sabbath is key, and dinner can be a Sabbath. Absolutely. All that.
Yeah, and communication. If you're not a talker and you're not a great communicator, really try to be. Communicate words with your children. They want to know. You know, just communicate them. I love you. You know, spend that time with them, but I love your dad too. I really need some downtime. If you start that little when they're now in this season, it'll be so much easier when they're 13. They'll go, yeah, I've seen this my whole life. I get it. They'll eventually see the pattern. So communicate, talk, interact.
All right, real quick one. What does family mealtime look like in your house?
You know, it looks different all the time, different seasons, different. In the summertime, it's barbecue, and we're always in the backyard after, you know, a long day. During the school year, I try and at least make two dinners a week where we're sitting down as a family, where I really am intentional. I make the kids involved. I set up the table. I light a candle. I have the girls bring out, you know, two nights a week. And if that doesn't happen, for sure, no matter what, one night a week. And it's so awesome. They appreciate it. They love it, especially when they get older. It's if they've been doing it since they were little and they're now in this season, they ask for it. They want to have dinner with us. So and then the other nights of the week, it's a crock pot, and we're eating before soccer, and we're standing around the crock pot, shoveling it into our mouths, and, you know, I'm screaming, come on down for dinner, you know, and, you know, we're all kind of running around like a rat race. So it looks different, you know, like I just said, in different seasons in our life.
But, we try to be intentional with conversation. We share highs and lows. You know, let's go around. What are highs and lows? What was the high today? What was the low today? And so that at least gets everybody to kind of think through their day and maybe let us in a little bit. And we just have to be good or not to ask follow-up questions.
And we have one child who will always go, can I be excused? And we do make them say, may I be excused? They are not allowed to just get up and leave. I didn't cook for however long it took, 5 minutes or 5 hours, for them just to get up and leave. So at a really early age, we taught them to say, may I be excused? And I would say, nope, you haven't heard everybody's high-low today. And, you know, sometimes that went over and sometimes that didn't. And then we taught our kids very early on, we're talking early, to rotate. One of them would take everybody's plate from the table and say, excuse me, are you done with your meal? Yeah, I am. They would take the plate, and then they would come, and they would rotate. So whenever, you know.
It's not always that formal, but that's the principle.
No, but when we have guests.
Are you done?
Yeah, it would be most like that most of the time. But most of the part, when guests did come, there was a shift in attitude. You know, they knew that they were guests, and they go, oh, can I take your plate for you? I just wanted to teach them to serve others and not always me just being, here you go, kid. You know, you deserve the best meal ever. No, it was, let's all join together and be, you know, enjoy this meal and appreciate it, give thanks, and to bless one another. So it's just creating habit early on.
Yep, doing dishes together and all that kind of stuff. Next question is advice on raising godly men from a young age, spiritual leaders and real men, especially when husband feels a little intimidated. That's a good question. It is, and I think it is intimidating. Just kind of having to be, or just wanting to be in, you know, a man that leads a home. But raising godly men, I think for me, what really helped, again, I think I got a little inside track. Maybe God knew I needed it. Being a youth pastor, like I mentioned earlier, I could see where if self-control and discipline and some of the fruit of the spirit type stuff, gentleness, patience, kindness, you know, all that, if it's not trained and taught and encouraged and instilled and brought in early, it just gets harder and harder for it to come out later and later. And so I think I had the benefit of an insight of seeing maybe where training wasn't being done by parents early on. And then I saw, on the flip side, I saw where it was being done. It was like, oh, wow, there's a world of difference, really. And again, there's exceptions, of course. But as a general rule, over all the 10 years of being a youth pastor, you could see the parents who really put in the hard work and the energy and the time and had the communication and the conversation that it played out. And when it come to me, I have one son, you know, the other three are daughters. So for me, raising a godly man, for me, as my kids got older, I really, and this is the forefront of my thinking even now. It's my motivator is, do I want my son to be just like me? And that's a real corrective thinking, right? Do I want my son to match my purity? Do I want my son to match my self-control? Do I want my son to match how much he sees me serve others, care about others, talk about the Lord? And we can go on and break that down. And so for me, it's that healthy fear. Like, I want to be on my game. I want it to be genuine and real with God first, because I know that's where it needs to come from first. So for me, it's all about when I talk about my son, I don't ever want to expect something from him that I'm not willing to do myself. So I'm wanting my son to be just like me. Now, I'm going to point out my flaws so that, hey, here's an area where I struggle, son. You know, I don't want you to end up like how I struggled with this issue or whatever it is. And on the flip side with my daughters, we just know it's more caught than taught. So with my daughters, as far as me raising godly women, as a father, it's, you know, I want to be the person, the type of man that my daughters are looking for. And so in how I speak them, I want them to bounce every interaction they have with a guy off of how I treat them and ultimately how my son treats them. And so, you know, it's really, I want to be the man I want my daughters to marry. And again, it plays to all those key factors. So in a practical way for me raising godly men, I found resources. So I found a real practical way, and I started very early with my son. He was big into just, you know, knights and medieval stuff and, you know, creating weapons and all that kind of stuff. That was his world. And so I found a book called Raising a Modern Day Knight. And I didn't take from the book exactly, but I took the principles from the book. And so I walked through and I talked through, you know, okay, here's what a knight is. He cares for women. He respects authority. You know, and there's kind of some criteria for what a good knight does.
And this is at an early age, again.
At the toddler
age.
He's tiny.
Yeah. He's learning not at 13. This is happening like 5, 4, 6, 7. You know,
this is still a play out. And if you were to walk up to my 15-year-old son and say, "What are you?" He would be able to quickly say, "I'm a squire." Right? It's kind of weird for a 15-year-old because he was a page. And we started with what a page does. A page helps mommy. A page is not out with the knight right now. The page is doing things that are more small, and I don't want to take time with getting into it all, but
we're
he clearly
nerdy.
Knew there was a stage of what a page does. And we've had that talk of you're a squire now, so now you're starting to do knight type stuff, but you're not just grabbing the spear and all the sword and all that kind of stuff. And so we're just kind of walking through that, and those are still conversations we kind of have, and obviously I navigate a more teen ish. But I think that's something that really helps is knowing again that intentionality. What am I aiming him for? And so that's part of that.
And for a husband who may be intimidated and wives that may have a husband who's maybe not totally tracking with the Lord or maybe may not have those resources, you can encourage him. You can pray for him. You can build him up to let him know that he can be a great father. It really can start with you guys, encouraging him, maybe asking God to lead you to a book like the book Darren read, or maybe another book that would maybe bless your husband, because you're the ones who know, you know, your interests that your husband have. But I want to encourage you gals to constantly be lifting your husband up, constantly be encouraging him, even when maybe he's not being the greatest guy or the strongest leader. He will if you tell him he is. He will if you give him room to be. I know that in my personality, I can kind of want to get in there and do it the way I want to do it. And all that does is get in the way from your husband growing in a way that will benefit your children. Let your husband make mistakes. Darren and I do things totally different, and that's okay. You know, just encourage your husband, even if he's not radically, you know, chasing after God. Encourage him. He eventually will. Keep praying for him and keep resourcing yourself and going, hey, babe, I found this. This is pretty cool. And another thing, when you do see your husband really doing a great job, point that out to your kids. Yesterday, just real quick example, and I need to share this, and it was so powerful for Caleb. We're under a lot of stress right now. There's a lot of things kind of going on behind the scenes at our home and in a busy life, and Darren was just like carrying a load. I mean, tired, exhausted. And I am like, bah! You know, crazy lady. And Darren's just trucking, steady. And we went to go meet up with the grandparents, and I said to Caleb real quickly, I said, hey, bud, you know what? You're going to be a great dad. You're going to look at what, you know, look at what dad's handling right now. And he's doing such a great job. And I am so excited for you someday to be a great husband, to bless your wife like dad's blessing me. And, you know, Caleb was like deer in the headlights, like, where did that come from? And it was just it was a teachable moment. It was communicating, and it was just being real. You know, it was a stressful day, but it was neat to be able to bring in the stress and have it be a good thing. Or, you know, if Darren hadn't been handling it well and was, you know, breaking down, I'd go to Caleb and go, you know what? Life is tough. We need to pray for Dad. How can we bless him? How can we help him? And I would have tried to figure out another way to kind of go around it if Darren was not maybe handling it, you know, as great as he did. So it's all communicating. It's all being aware of and being present to see what's taking place. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. Sorry.
Let's move on to another one.
Sorry.
All right. Couple questions that are very similar. How to break the passy. How can you discuss addiction, obsession with the toddler, pacifier, iPad, etc.? The stuff.
The passy. The binky. The moo moo.
And it's probably some of it's how do you break the mom of the passy? Yeah. Right? Because where's the passy? You're probably more, you know, you're more.
I had about 20 everywhere in my bra. Okay. So all of them were different. Of course, my first kid, of course, she'll never have a pacifier ever, you know, and that was that first mom thing, and she didn't, and then it was hard. And then, you know, Caleb came around, and I thought he was going to devour me alive, like he was nursing every 5 minutes for an hour. And I'm like, buy every pacifier in the supermarket. So he definitely was a passy baby. And then Riley did it, and Sky sucked her thumb. So there's all sorts of different, you know, children out there. And for us to stop it, we really wanted our kids to communicate. We wanted them to talk. And we had seen those babies, which totally sweet and adorable, you know, when they're kind of saying, you know, talking with their little passy, totally cute. Nothing wrong with that. But we just knew, you know, as far as their teeth and communicating, there was a point where we were like, we need to get rid of the passy. We need to be able to have that kid be able to be okay and let us pacify them with a hug or holding or whatever. And again, some kids are very oral. So at 8 months, I think we ditched the passy. One, just because we couldn't locate it. I think it was at that point where we were just like, this
it's
is driving
us nuts.
We
lost it. Do we buy a new one? No, let's just do it.
And our world would come crumbling down if we did not have that pacifier. So we felt a bit in bondage to the pacifier. Again, this is our own story. Everybody has their own scoop on pacifiers. I'm not saying they're right or wrong. But for us in this question, we cold turkey. I'm a cold turkey girl. I don't, you know, my mom said, oh, I cut the rubber thing off halfway and then I gave it to you. I'm like, no, just cold turkey, rip the thing out, don't go to the store. And when we're feeling weak and we want to go get that passy, let's support each other. Let's use other ways of pacifying, you know, this little one. And it cold turkey worked for us. And it was pretty miserable for about 2 days. So again, parenting is not easy. It's going to be hot, sweaty, tiring, exhausting, and you're going to have days where it is miserable, and you got to embrace it. You do. And so for 2 days, that child was not happy. I mean, she kept looking for it, and she wasn't talking quite at that time. You know, or it was Caleb. You know, he wasn't really communicating. I think he was doing like this more, like, you know, and I'm just like, sorry, kid, you know, and it was hard. But we're so glad he did. He was an early talker, and he eventually got over it. He was very verbal. Again, that was just him. But we cold turkey. I hope that helps.
I think to play in this too, you know, I know. Again, we live in a culture that's very distracting. And I wouldn't say the pacifier is necessarily a distraction. It certainly can be, you know. But I think I like how you even mentioned iPad, because again, you know, sometimes now we don't even necessarily think about buying a car that doesn't have a DVD in the back headrest, right? So that the second we get in the car, we can turn it on. Hopefully they'll fall asleep. You know, it's all about kind of that distraction piece. And again, just this is us. One, we couldn't afford it. But secondly, that was an option, you know, back when it's been a while since we bought a car. So it was a very expensive option we didn't pay for. But we've never been the DVD player or the hand the kid an iPad or video game family. We just haven't been. Again, that's just us.
It takes more work.
It is more work to not do that.
Yes.
We certainly had our time where we'd, you know, turn on, you know, the TV and watch whatever it was.
A little movie.
And all that kind of stuff, of course. But we just didn't feel like we wanted our kids to have a distraction every single place we went. So here we're at the restaurant, here's your iPad. Here we're in the car, watch the screen, where it's just watch the screen here, watch the screen here, watch the screen here, watch the screen here, hold the screen here, play with the screen here. Again, we just, and that's where culture's going. We know that. There's no, you know, we're seeing that. But again, I think if we just did that, we'd have less verbal kids. It'd be just harder to communicate. We'd communicate less. Again, as a youth pastor, I could see the addictive nature of video games.
Screen time
and seeing the kids that, like, you know, you can't carry on a conversation with anybody because you're so used to just staring at a screen and that's all you do from the second you get home.
It doesn't allow teachable moments. I remember going to restaurants when my babies were little with grandparents and aunties and friends and uncles, and I was not a part of the conversation for about 5 years. And I was okay with that, because I was sitting there training my kid how to sit there and be polite and to be self-controlled. And at one point, I had 4 of them. So I really was like kind of checked out. And I was okay with that because I knew what was going to take place 5 years from then, was that my kids would be able to sit around a table at 10, 7, and 4 and be able to sit at a restaurant with self-control and interact, but it took work. And there were times where I'd come back from that dinner crying, smelling, sweaty, and just like, I didn't even get a chance to eat my meal. And what did they talk about? I mean, there were moments where I was like, this is lame. But I quickly came back to the Lord just reminding me, this is hard work. You wanted these babies. What now I give them to you and you're just kind of over it and you don't want to pour into it? And so I would just kind of go, you're right. And I'd make it enjoyable, you know, and I would make it where maybe Darren would get involved or older sister might get involved or an auntie would get involved when maybe I wanted to be a part of a conversation and I was PMSing and having a moment going, I don't know if I can do this. You know, my mom would maybe jump in or a friend would jump in and go, you know what? You know, just take about 5 minutes to eat and I'll make him sit here and color, you know, or I'll sit here and read him his little book while you do that. So, you know, I did pull in other people to help me in those moments where I didn't have it in me, but it's so worth the work. I promise you. I just want to encourage you gals, put the time in, don't eat the meal and don't engage in the conversation right now, maybe, but in the future you will. You'll have really beautiful, rich conversations and time with people very, very soon.
All right, let's move into another question. Let's answer this quick so we can
get some. Yeah, sorry, I'm rambling.
What are some ways you make sure to spend individual time with each of your children? How can we spend time with each child without creating jealousy or issues between siblings? Splitting time, giving equal attention. Yeah, that's the concept.
Communication. Constantly telling your kids you love them. and how much you love their brother or their sister. I'm a big believer in that. I'm always telling them when I have that individual time, like, I love you and I love Caleb and Rai, or sometimes I just say, I love you. You know, I make it very direct. It's not always about the other sibling, but they definitely know that they're loved and they're secure in that. On every level, I think, because we physically just hug and love and we verbally share it and they see it between us. But two, I incorporate how much I love their siblings and how much I, you know, or I talk about their other sibling, like, didn't he just do an amazing job? Like, or, oh my goodness, Riley is just an amazing soccer player. I can't wait to go see her, you know, play soccer this weekend. So it's all about talking and communicating and teaching your kids to think of others other than themselves and thinking that we need to just constantly be pouring into them, which we do, but there's a balance in it and a balance in sharing the excitement and the achievements of their siblings.
Yeah, so when you're in individual time, you're obviously pouring into them, talking about them, a lot about them, but then you're also, we're very intentional just talking about the other kids. So they don't just kind of get this, it's all about me mentality. It's all about we're a family. Let's celebrate what your sister's doing. How's your relationship going? And so it's very intentional in that. And I know we just are intentional in our language of just saying, we want you guys to be best friends as you grow up. Not, you know, competing. And our two girls, they share a room. They're very different in personality. They're different in cleanliness. They are different in every way you put it. But we don't have the option of giving them each their own room to where it's like, okay, you're the messy one, have your messy room. You're the clean one, have your clean room. No, this is all shared, and their personalities are different. So we obviously are navigating that and helping them be patient with each other. You know, the dirty ones, like, I don't know where she put my stuff, and well, because it's usually on the floor, and the other ones, you know, the opposite. And so I think we're just intentional in talking about how working through those things and then really using the language of, we want you guys to be close siblings, you know, and so kind of we're always pouring that into them. And then just intentionally, we just, it's not like we have on the calendar, like, oh, here's my date with Sky, here's my date day with Riley, here's my date day with Caleb. I really look for just any little opportunities, you know. So I know I drive my daughter to soccer practice, so we have some time there, and sometimes we'll make a little stop, and we'll do things like that. I'm with my son a lot, you know, going to cross-country meets or whatever. So a lot of that individual time happens there, but then there's also times we just try to be intentional to divide and take them out and do special individual things.
Yeah.
All right, how do you get your husband on the same page so you're not the sole disciplinarian? What is your advice to someone who doesn't see eye to eye with the spouse, with your spouse on major things, discipline, religion, etc., things like that? So do you want me to plug my ears?
Darren and I came into the scene when it came to disciplining and training children on opposite sides. His parents did it differently than my parents, and then I came into being a mom at a young age. I had Serena right when I turned 20, and I was trained by a gal who was discipling me, so she gave me a lot of information on just how to discipline and train a little one. So we both were very opposite, and we both love each other and have mutual respect. I think it really has to start there. You have to just remember, I love my husband. You know, I love him. I do. And I need to show him respect. They want to have that respect. And you need to give him room to learn this whole new deal of parenting. I think those are really crucial areas that we need to keep in the forefront of our thinking. That love, the respect, and giving your husband room to be able to make mistakes and to learn while you're learning. And that's what I had to do with Darren. It was just kind of like, I want Darren to be the spiritual leader, and I want our kids to kind of look to him. And they look to both of us, which is great. But I was able to just really pray for Darren and share with him the information that was given to me. I didn't just come into this world and say, oh, I know how to do this. You know, this is great. No, I would share the information with Darren in a sweet, not in an intimidating way, like I knew what I was talking about. It was just coming to him with love, going, we really need to figure this out. We want our kids to grow up with self-control, and this idea was given to me by another mom, and it worked for her, and I love how her kids are. And for me, back in the day, it was for our children, and some of you already know this because it's been around forever, it's the do it immediately, completely, with a happy heart. So that, again, was do it immediately, completely, with a happy heart. And again, this was given to me, information.
Yeah, that's become our definition for what does obedience look like? What does obedience mean? It means doing it immediately, kind of when we ask. It means doing it the job completely, doing it with a happy heart.
Yeah. So I came to Darren, and, you know, he was an open book. He was like, okay, we got to figure this out. And I was able to share that information with him lovingly. Not saying, this is how you do it, this is how we should do it. And, you know, I'm like, well, what do you think? Let's try. And again, we want to win our husbands over, you guys. We want to win them over. We love them, even if they're falling short in every area. We need to win our husbands over, especially if they're not believers. And in that, you're going to show that in love and patience. And so it rolls in every, I feel like, in every area in your life. Finances, especially disciplining your children, how the home's going. We want to win them over, and we want to bring the ideas to them
and motivated.
Make them a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, just as a guy, I mean, I'm certainly more motivated when it comes from the positive side. If Joy comes and goes, gosh, you have not spent time with Caleb, or you're ignoring the girls, or whatever it is, that to me is not motivating. It may be totally true.
It will hurt
But it's not
feelings.
Motivating to me. And, yeah. And I know, like, when Joy goes, man, I loved seeing you just have that little 5 minutes with Riley the other day. I could just see it filled her up. I could see, you know, like little things like that. That makes me go, yeah, I need to do more of that. I want to do more of that. You know, I'm pouring in versus going, you don't spend enough time.
You're an idiot.
And so it's just coming from that positive angle that's more motivating to me. And it is, I mean, again, you turn on the TV, you see sitcoms, the dad's a doofus, he can't get it right, all that kind of stuff. And so we've got to push back against that, certainly as believers. And I think, you know, the wives obviously are always, and I will admit, you are, you know, as you know what you're doing, it's always the woman knows and the dad's a doofus in every sitcom. And there is a lot of that because you're around the kids every day. You're around them where you know. Guys, we come home, you know, and so it can be a real pull of a woman going, I'm exhausted, I've been with your kids all day here when the dad walks in. Right, and that's not motivating to a dad to go, yeah, now I'm ready to be a dad. I'm home and give me the kids, I'm dad time. It's again, it's that push and pull of knowing, okay, well maybe he came home and his stress looked totally different. So it's not just you were the only one who worked hard, here's your kids, be a dad now. It's, you know, it's navigating that and inviting in and going, oh, I would love you spending some time with these ones right now. Or, you know, whatever it would look like. This is kind of how you're wrapping it.
I read a sweet book during this time when my littles were little, and it was called Fruit of Her Hands. It's kind of a radical book. It's very, very old-fashioned. But it really, what I grabbed from that was, I'm Darren's helper. I was created to help Darren. And I have to keep that in my thinking. And there's a lot of times when I am, again, I'm going to say it, PMSing and just hormonal and tired, that I have to put it on sticky notes in my bathroom. I'm his helper. I want to love him. I want to care for him. And when I do that, I want to help him in this parenting thing. I want to help him during the day so that my kids are excited to see Darren, and that I've done things to kind of prepare myself when Darren comes home. I'm his helper. And that book really encouraged me. So if you can get your hands on some good books on just how to be your husband's helper, it does help. I read a lot, like a page, like why I'm on the toilet, you know, and then like right before I pass out in bed, or, you know, when I'm, you know, waiting in an office, you know, to get our teeth cleaned. I read a little bit, as much as I could, on books that were encouraging me how to be Darren's helper and how to love and speak to him in his love language.
All right. So here's, I'm watching the clock here. Last question that we have time for. And I'm holding a lot of cards and they're all in the same thing. So roughly the same thing. And it's kind of weird we're going to end on this because it's funny, but it's real. How do you balance showing grace to your children, doing discipline, setting boundaries? How can I get my children to listen the first time without yelling? Best ways to channel energy of a willful, spirited toddler. Proper ways to discipline a 16-month-old who thinks hitting's funny. How to handle discipline. How to discipline your child in the eyes of God and a God. How to discipline a 4-year-old who talks back. Discipline, discipline, discipline. How do you handle temper tantrums?
These are great questions.
Do you spank? And yeah, so basically the discipline piece.
Yeah.
Okay.
We do.
Yes.
Yes. There's lots and lots and lots of love. I mean, I look at God and how he works with us, and he loves us so much. His love draws us to him, but he definitely disciplines those he loves. And so for me, I just real quick, when I wasn't really, training and disciplining Serena, our oldest, when she was a little one, she was about 3, 2.5, tantrum, just ugly, ugly, ugly. And I had this precious mom who was discipling me and speaking into my life, and I was very open to anything. And she looked at me and she goes, "Can I share something with you?" And I'm like, "Yes, why are your kids so good and she's so rotten?" She's like, "I can't stand her. I want to lock her in a closet." And she's like, "Yeah, that's why I'm going to share this with you." So she was very, very sweet. And she just told me, you need to communicate with them. They have boundaries. She understands what you're telling her, and you've got to stick firm with what you want her to do. And I was like, okay, well, what does that look like? And at that point, she shared with me the do it immediately, completely, with a happy heart. And if they don't do those things immediately, completely, with a happy heart, there are consequences. And so for me, and again, everyone's different. You know, I came from a family where my dad had a heavy hand. So, you know, I was just like, I'm not going to hit her. You know, I'm not going to, that will teach her to hit. And my girlfriend's like, nope, that's not what God's word says. You love her and you're showing her love and you have control because you have a plan and this is going to be your plan. And so she kind of wrote it out. She goes, what are the things you're struggling? Tantrum. Okay, put it on the refrigerator. Tantrum. And I take her to the refrigerator and go, tantrum. There will be consequences if you have a tantrum. Okay, and I'm going to ask you to do this immediately, completely, with a happy heart. If I see that you're not doing it immediately for me to have you settle down and not be throwing a tantrum, then you're going to go in the corner, and I will sit there in the corner with you, holding you in that corner, taking you away from your little movie or your toys or whatever, and we will sit there until you pull yourself together. And then if she didn't pull herself together and she was still having that tantrum, I'd say, all right, you're going to get a spank. And so I'm like, you mean you spank her? And she's like, I do. And she had a little wooden spoon, and she goes, and I would take her in the bedroom, and I would sit there, and, you know, nowadays we can be arrested, unfortunately, for this. And so it always took place at home, and I'd go in the bedroom. I'm like, honey, I told you, I warned you that if you have a tantrum, it was on the refrigerator, we had a quiet time, we tried to sit in the corner, you still didn't obey mommy. This is the consequence. When you step out of God's little circle of grace, there's consequences. And isn't that true now in life? I mean, as adults. So I would then struggle sometimes, you know, depending on what child it was, and do a little on the bottom. Now let me tell you the difference between a hand and a little something, a little wooden spoon. Less force, you know, with a little, you know, hand, you got to get a little pat on that bottom to give it that sting, you know, but then with a little, it was just very light, you know, and it would sting. And I'd be like, I'm so sorry. We would then sit. She would be crying or I'm like, I'm going to pray for you. This is unfortunate that we've gotten to this point. And I would sit there and hold them. I would lay on the bed with them and I'd be, you know, we would cry out to God, Lord, help this little one. She's struggling right now, God, and only you can bring her back to you, bring her back to just being clear. And if still the tantruming and crying was taking place, I would then literally lock, and this is Riley, our middle one, our strong-willed child, lock her in the room by herself. And she would throw things.
She did not like isolation.
She did not like, I mean, she would work it out. And she would tire herself out until the, you know, the end of the however long it was. And guess what? Eventually she'd come out and be broken and say, "I'm so sorry." And of course you are. I love you. And then every child was different. You know, I would bring Caleb and put the little spoon right there, and he'd be like, "Okay, I'm so sorry. I won't do that again." And it only took.
He was the pleaser.
Yeah, he
sometimes just needed the reminder. It's out on the mantle.
But okay. But it took a couple of times for him to feel that sting. And then the other one, you know, it just, they're all so very different. Now, sometimes that may not work, and you may need to seek, you know, more advice on, you know, a particular child. But the goal here is being totally consistent and sometimes being late for appointments, sometimes not making appointments. I'd have to call and go, "I'm sorry, I cannot come to this appointment because I can't." And because I'd have a child that would have to be addressed.
And sometimes, let me push in here because I know we got to end here, is with the discipline piece too, I know, again, it's like, well, it kind of goes back to that husband. Well, what about my husband? He's not there. I'm the bad cop the whole time. He just comes home and then it's hug daddy and daddy's good and I'm the evil one. I think one of the things that Joy did really well is sometimes she delayed the discipline. She delayed the punishment. She goes, you know, you got it. You're going to get a spank. And sometimes if we were out in public, it was maybe a mark on the hand. She'd just do a little pen mark just to kind of remind them, you know, I can't spank you here in Target. But when we get home, there's something coming, you know, and there's a little thing there that
right,
they get to look at. Yeah, they try to wipe it off. But it's like, we know it's still there. You know it's there. It helps you think about it. But it wouldn't be always immediate. Sometimes it'd be when Dad gets home, Dad is going to deal with this. Now, I'd have to walk in and well, I had a hard day at work. I'm supposed to just be able to hug him and love him. No, so there were times where I'd walk in and I had to step right into discipline, even though the kid didn't defy me, didn't do anything to me, but it showed unity. It showed me. So I'd go in with one of the kids and go, "I heard Mom shared with me, this is how you acted today, and this is what happened, and there's consequences to that. And, you know, it doesn't, I don't like, you know, when we treat Mommy that way. I'm at work," and, you know, and we navigate through that. But solid front, united front, not huggy daddy, evil Mommy. And so the discipline was a shared thing. It was always encouraged, backed up, reinforced. And if there were disagreements on, "Oh, I don't know if I would have spanked for that," that stuff always had to happen offline at a different time.
Yeah.
There was never disagreement in front of them as to that discipline. And I think that's just important as a united front.
And if you have a husband who's not on board with that, then go with his idea. Okay, if he's like, I don't want to do that, go, "Okay, I totally respect that. Then let's together think of an idea where they will try and feel the sting a little bit then, babe. What do you want to do?" Maybe ask him what he thinks is important. Another thing I wanted to touch base on, there are some children who may not be able to get little chassis. We called it chassis. So people, you know, code, you want a chassis kid, and people would go, "What's a chassis?" There are some.
Oh, nothing.
Yeah.
It's a lollipop.
There are some people who cannot physically spank their babies, okay? I get that. I understand that's real. But I love parents who will call their kids on their attitudes. And I've seen that with some mamas in here. And they're so good about going, "Hey, don't talk like that." You know, and they call their kids out on that. And it's really a heart issue. So I understand if there's parents that can't physically or maybe legally cannot take that responsibility into their hands to kind of go that biblical route. But what they're doing is they're addressing the child's heart. And that is huge. And so I really respect parents who call their kids out on their attitude, because that's really what it is. And so you can approach it that way, and you make it very clear. You remove that child and go, "Excuse me one moment, I'd love to carry on with this great conversation because we're going somewhere with it, but I need to take my kid out and I need to talk to him." And then maybe even have that child come back and apologize. And so, you know, have that kid say, "What do you say? I'm sorry for being rude."
Yeah.
That's a definite form of you know, training your child and having consequences.
Again, this looks different. We need to close up. But I want to just close with a couple scriptures that kind of backs up again sort of what this looks like. And again, it says, "Discipline your son, for there is hope. Don't set your heart on putting him to death." Discipline's a part of that. "The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. And so there's just that backup of we discipline because we love, and we don't have time to go to Hebrews 12, talks about what father doesn't discipline a son he loves. And so it's giving that boundaries, it's pointing it all back to God. And so...
And I want to encourage really fast. I know there's mamas out there that are single moms, maybe moms, military moms, who are doing this radical, gnarly job of mothering on your own. Didn't expect that. I really respect you guys. It's not easy, but you can do it on your own. You can do it with the help of other people. And don't lose hope and don't stop pouring into your children. The sanctification still can take place through that single mama. But make sure you find your team and your helpers who are going to be on board with you with the same idea. So I want to give hope and encouragement to those girls who are doing it alone and doing it by themselves. I've been so blessed to be able to walk through this journey with Darren, but I have had a season where I've had to be by myself in that, and it can be done. God is good. He's faithful. He is your husband. He gave us the Holy Spirit to have discernment in how to train these children to follow him. So it can be done. Yeah. So I just wanted to kind of leave you on that note. Sorry.
All right. Thank you. We ran way over our
drop dead
time.
Talkers. So, sorry. Thank you. Love you guys. Yeah.